Today on the Grave Talks, part two of our conversation about the historic Scott County Jail, a conversation with Miranda Young. So the jail opened in, what did you say, 1904?
Yes, the jail was built in 1904. This is technically the third jail, but it's the most solid and fixed structure. The first jail was opened in 1850, whenever Scott County was established, and it was essentially an overturned wagon. They said it kind of makes you think of a caboose type structure. They would hold inmates in that. Then that they did that for 10 to 12 years. And then after that, they did build a structure there where our current jail sits that they did house inmates in. But it wasn't until the early 1900s, whenever we had that huge influx of people coming in for the coal mines and the timber mining and such, that they did go in and said, hey, we really want to show that we mean law and order and build a good, firm, solid structure. So that's when they built this jail on the same foundation that the last one was on. And they built it there in the two-story structure that was shaped like a castle.
How long did they use it as a jail then?
They used the jail up until 2008.
Oh, that's a long time.
Yes. It shut down briefly in the 1960s for right around about 10 years, from about 1963 to 1974. It shut down briefly. They did build a jail in a different spot there from the square. But they had so many escapes from there that they ended up bringing the inmates back and then housing them there till 2008.
Because I would think a jail built in 1904 would have very few, if any, modern amenities. I would think heating and air conditioning had to have been put in at some point then.
Much later, yes. Okay. It was put in. It was a pretty primitive structure up until about the mid-80s. I know on the second and third floor, they didn't really have much covering over the bars on the windows
there. Oh, it had to have been so cold in the winter.
Very cold in the winter, very hot in the summer. Bugs, the weather elements. They did end up covering it with an opaque plexi there in the late 80s. We've had some inmates that came in that talked about how they would have to use their cots or their blankets to cover up the windows just to, give some shelter there, as late as the mid 80s. And we've also had stories of where kids would make summer money by going back in behind the jail. And this would have been anywhere from the 30s up until the 60s. But they would, the inmates would throw down money and the kids would go and get cigarettes and moon pies. And they would have these elaborate pulley systems to throw and pull the moon pies and cigarettes and stuff back up to the inmates. So it was very primitive up until about the mid 80s. They did get, after the jail shut down in 2008, Scott County gave the jail to the town of Huntsville. And in 2017, they did get a tourism grant. And with the $75,000 tourism grant, they went, they painted, they did put in some really nice windows. And then they also updated the heating and cooling systems in there. So we are really nice climate controlled now. But once they got the grant in 17, they still really didn't know what they wanted to do with the jail. And so it wasn't until Christy and I approached them in 2021 and approached them with the idea of opening it as the True Crime Museum and Paranormal Research Center. That's when they were like, we know what we want to do with it now. And so they gave us the opportunity. And we've had at this point over 125 teams in investigating.
I think it's really interesting, too, that you've talked to some people who were jailed there, some former inmates. When you talk to them, I'm sure they kind of filled in some information maybe you didn't know about. And I also wonder, Did any of them have any paranormal experiences that you know of?
Yeah, that's probably been one of my favorite parts about doing this is talking to the people who were involved there. Because, you know, I always like to say, you know, being from a small town like this, most people in the community have had somebody that has served there either in the capacity of serving as sheriff, jailer, cook, deputy, or served there as in serving time. In some cases, it was both. But, you know, we're constantly getting different stories from people who had lived there when the jailers lived there, and then also the inmates that lived there. And several reports are that the elevator, it doesn't work now, but the elevator, when it was in service, it would run on its own. Inmates would say that the elevator would come up, they could see it, it would open, nobody would be on it. Deputies who worked there, there was one lady that said she absolutely did not like riding on the elevator because she got on it and something coughed in her ear one night. And so she would take the stairs, wouldn't ride the elevator after that. We've also had former sheriffs and deputies, as well as inmates, say that the stairwell was very loud. You would think that somebody had gotten out of their cell. And there's actually a couple times that they would call emergency headcount because they would think that somebody was running up and down the stairs and somebody was out. They would do headcount, find nobody was out, and you know, not really be able to explain that. We even had reports from at least two inmates that actually requested to be sent on to Brushy Mountain State Prison because they were so creeped out by some of the things that would happen there at the jail.
Ooh, that's interesting. That's pretty bad when the inmates are like, we don't want to stay here. This is too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, it all depended on the time that you were in there. We've had reports from some that it was, you know, a lighter environment. But I often like to say, you know, sometimes it was like Mayberry and other times it was just mayhem, you know, because there would be so much that would go on as far as activity. It really just depended on who was in charge.
Now, you mentioned briefly a minute ago about it. You have two other purposes with this jail, and you have the museum. But before we talk about that, I want to talk about the paranormal research center aspect of the jail. Tell me a little about that.
So we have the jail set up as a paranormal research center. We call these our after dark tours. So we kind of try to offer a little something for everyone. If you are just kind of more interested in the stories and the history of things, we offer flashlight tours where you can come in. We share the history. We play the audio, video, and photo evidence. We also do one little mini session up in the women's cell on maximum security on the third floor. We have a more immersive experience for those that maybe don't have a team, or that is kind of interested in getting into the paranormal, that we call our guided ghost hunts, where you can go and investigate with myself or my business partner, Christy. And we take you on a 3-hour tour with our tools where we try to establish communication and do a ghost hunt in there. And then, of course, we offer private paranormal investigations for more established teams, but it for anyone that's got tools that wants to go and have a private experience there in the jail. They essentially rent the jail out and can go in and conduct paranormal research. And so between myself and Christy, you know, we like to talk to the teams and see what they capture and see if we're able to correlate and get, you know, see if the experiences are different or how they're similar. And then we're also constantly between me and her going in and, you know, asking questions, looking at our video surveillance, and really just seeing if we can kind of figure out how and why some of this activity happens.
Do you find that frequently they're getting similar experiences? Not that every group that goes in there is going to be getting the exact same thing by any means, but have you found there's some consistencies in their findings?
We do. We find a lot of consistencies. I mean, there have been dramatic things that have happened as far as, you know, one team actually captured a picture getting thrown off the wall 4.5 feet, and they actually caught the shadow figure throwing it off the wall, which was fascinating. Some of the other experiences are a little more subtle, like that with the word anvil, you know, mm-hmm. that was captured. But we always encourage the teams. We've got an 8-foot timeline in there that's got names as well as historical events that teams can use as a resource. But we always encourage the teams, if they have questions or sharing their evidence with us, then that way we can go and maybe either answer some questions that they have to help them go in and maybe ask more poignant questions, or really just, like I said, in keeping a log of things to see names as well as occurrences. But we do find there are certain smells that people have captured that have been very similar. There is a cell up on the third floor that a guy by the name Big Roy occupies, and he's in there. He tends to like to communicate with women a little bit more. We do believe he is in there for crimes against women. Oh. And women tend to consistently get the same type of activity in there. Men as well, he will talk to men, but he tends to, you know, talk to them a little bit different. There's also a cell on the second floor that men tend to be treated a little differently in. That's our work release cell. And at one time it was a women's cell as well. Second floor, shorter people tend to feel somebody come up to them, put their hand on their shoulders or put their hands on their head. We found that that seems to be consistent, as well as a guy that is seen on that second floor. A lot of the time, he won't manifest himself in front of you, but if you're reading the articles or if you're standing in there looking at the displays, people tend to see him in the reflection, and that seems to be kind of a common thing. Chef Dan, people get the name Chef Dan in the kitchen. And what I always enjoy is when you have the teams that come in, they want to know the history. They don't always want to know the activity. And there's certain things when we are telling the hotspots, we won't tell them. We won't describe certain features of some of the people who are seen there or certain things that are said. We won't necessarily describe that just in case they do have an encounter with that spirit and we're able to kind of validate, you know, that by their descriptions and such. You know, whistling is something that's commonly heard that people get a lot, those footsteps up on the third floor, and then also the sound of keys jingling. So it really is fascinating whenever you kind of have that moment when somebody tells you what they've experienced, and then you can either go back and play evidence that other people have found or share other experiences they've had, and people are like, oh my gosh, that's exactly like or very similar to what we had happen. To me, that just is just beyond exciting when you're able to see that. But then with the differences, you do see that there are people that come in. We have found that the bigger teams don't tend to get as much activity as the smaller ones. And also certain styles of investigating, like on the second floor, they tend to communicate more whenever you treat it as more of a standoffish type thing where you put the tools in the rooms and you stay in the hall. Or sometimes they want you to put the tools in the hall and they stay. And then you stay in the rooms. So we try to share some of that. And it's always interesting when they come back and they'll say, well, we weren't getting anything. And then we tried this and then we you know, it worked.
Because I understand sharing that kind of information. It's like, historically, here's what works best for people. But when you share too much information with them, I would think that would influence when they're going to pick up. They might think they see something, it's like, ah, that has to be Sheriff Ellis, or because he's been seen here. I would think that could definitely influence what you're thinking you're getting.
And we don't want to influence anybody's experiences or, you know, create any type of haunting experience for anyone. So what we always do is we require them to take a orientation tour. And if they're putting out a video or anything of that nature, we require them to do at least the history tour. But we give them the option to either they can have the history, or if they want the history in the hot spots, we'll do that as well. We you know, want to make sure that they're armed with as much or as little knowledge as they want to have when they go in. And so a lot of the time, again, we'll refrain from a lot of the details on certain things, at least experience wise, because I feel you truly can shape somebody's experience that they have if you're not careful. Mm-hmm. There's a guy on the second floor, and he has some distinct features about him and some certain things that he has often been seen doing. One of those is sitting on a bunk and rocking. And so it is a room where a suicide did take place. And we, you know, will tell them this is a room where a suicide did take place. This is a room where people experience some things. But I will refrain from describing what most people have described, because I don't want to shape that experience.
Right. Now, there's also a museum inside the jail.
Yes.
Tell me a little about that.
So the community has been amazing, and they've stepped up, donated items and artifacts that belong to different law enforcement officials who are there from the area, and then also newspaper articles. We had a guy that donated us thousands, and I'm talking truckloads, of newspaper articles from right around about the 50s up until about 2012. And so these are newspapers from our local community that we've been able to pull stories from. And so when you come into the jail, you're going to, we have an audio tour that you can listen to as you go through it if you don't do one of our guided tours. And you get to look at the different artifacts, read the articles that are on the wall, and go through the jail there. Now, it is three floors. We're constantly adding new things. We have a law enforcement appreciation room where we highlight the stories of our 14 officers who were killed in the line of duty. We share their stories. We've got some uniforms and such. We also collecting patches from all around the country. Sometimes when paranormal investigators come in, or just different folks who are there touring, they'll send us patches. I think we're about six states from having every state. And so, but we're trying to fill the jail full of patches. We also keep track of all the line of duty deaths. Currently, however many we have each day, we keep track of those. And so you can come in, you can not only learn about true crime history from Scott County itself, but also from, you know, we try to put different information out there that's under that true crime umbrella that maybe people aren't aware of, like the cold case cards. We do have a set of those, and that's something that is a nationwide thing that's done at specific jails, where they put pictures of cold case victims on playing cards, and they give them to the folks there, the inmates inside the jail, that they can play with these cards. And the hope is that they'll know something about one of these cold cases, and that they'll talk about it. And these cards are different. There's only a few states that they do this in, but these cards are different in each state. And so we have a deck of those, and we share that story. So we're trying to get information out there on a local and a national level when it comes to our true crime museum.
And especially where it's housed in such an active location, and you're bringing in these artifacts and uniforms and things, do you find that there's any activity associated with any of the items that have been brought in?
Yeah, we actually have quite an impressive shank collection that's been, some have been brought in from our jail. Others have been found at Brushy Mountain Prison, which is only about 40 minutes from there. And that would have been where our worst of the worst inmates would have been sent to after they had their trial. And so, yeah, we have actually found that there are several articles. If you read those articles, it does tend to trigger disembodied voices or trigger activity around some of the pots and pans that are there inside the kitchen. Those will sway on their own. And then also, if you're talking about some of the different items that we have in there, we have had activity that will happen in other parts of the jail whenever you're discussing and talking about some of those artifacts.
That's so crazy.
It really is unbelievable. And, you know, for me, you know, going from an investigator doing this, you know, with Ghost Biker Explorations and putting out my show and everything, to actually being a location co-owner and being immersed in it, I feel we're able to really conduct some true paranormal research, you know, instead of just being at a one and done location. You know, we're in there every day. We're fully immersed in it, and we're getting to hear these stories from these other amazing investigators that come in and investigate. And we're able to take some of these findings and really even ask more questions and watch the activity evolve into what it is today. And it's constantly changing. You know, people will say, oh, the third floor is the most active, this and that. And they'll ask about it. And then before their investigation, it's like, well, currently the drunk tanks have been the most active. So we were able to actually watch the activity change the more people that come in and investigate. We actually conducted, after we got the Anvil response, we worked with a local detective and actually conducted a paranormal experiment there at the jail, which was pretty fascinating. The detective had, he took a container and he put items that were related to a crime inside of a box. And, well, it wasn't even really a box, but inside of a specific container. And we wanted to see if any of the spirits inside of the jail would reveal either information about the crime or information about the items that were located inside that container to some of our different investigators. And we would give them the option to put the container in certain rooms wherever they felt it was related. So we knew it was related to possibly an inmate and then related to the jail. And so the experiment is still ongoing. We're in a different phase of it right now. But we had those people write down anything that they got. I mean, it wasn't like tell us what's in the box type situation. It was more seeing if the jail would reveal anything about this crime to any of our investigators. And we welcomed anyone and everyone to do it. And we actually had them write the information down, put it in a sealed envelope, and put it in a locked box because we didn't even want to know what their findings were. We did not know what was inside the box either because we didn't want to be biased in any way. And so, like I said, it's still ongoing, but because the jail has been so talkative about everything that goes on, it was something we thought was kind of fascinating, and we wanted to try to see if we could get some type of answers regarding it.
The one last thing I do want to mention is the Jailhouse Informant. And yes, that's a podcast that you do from the jail, and it's it's a video podcast. Yes. Obviously, if you have video, you have audio, or it would just kind of be a train wreck if you didn't. We're just watching. We can read the captions. But you do that from in the jail. But what's so interesting is you're talking to other jails and prisons.
Yes. So
that's great.
So when we opened the jail, Christy and I wanted to create sort of a format to where we could have a conversation with the people who follow the jail. And so we wanted something for everybody, because the jail focuses not just on paranormal, but on history and true crime. We wanted the podcast to be the same way. So when we started out, we would have local people from the community. We would also have paranormal investigators on. And then last year, we started a series on the show. So the show's been going since we opened. We're on about, I think, 36 episodes, 37 at this point. But last year, we started a series to where we reached out to other historic jails around the country and wanted to highlight them on the show, kind of as a cross promotional type thing. But basically, we have different folks who either are doing what we're doing, whereas they're, you know, leasing the location. Some of them are owned by private individuals that are just for paranormal investigations. Some of them, like the one we had last week, they don't really do many paranormal investigations there. They had actually converted their jail into an inn as well as a bar. And so we wanted to get the word out with what these people are doing that is helping in the restoration and preservation of these jails that are all around the country. And I think at this point, our goal is to interview all of them, but we've got, I think we've done about 12 at this point. And it's so interesting because some of them, like, they house their Chamber of Commerce in there and they have a museum set up. And then others, like I said, may just be strictly for paranormal. So it's been really interesting to share this story and to, learn more about what others are doing. And we have such a great audience that watch and listen to the show that it gives them the opportunity to find other locations that they can go and visit and investigate at. We've met some amazing people doing this series, and we're really proud of how that's turned out, because we've really been able to take this podcast that we're doing and really make it something that people have really enjoyed listening to and following up on, because most of the people who do watch, they have gone and actually visited some of these jails or even investigated at them. So we're hoping, it kind of creates a sort of map, if you will, to where if you enjoy visiting these top locations that you can go check them out and support what these folks are doing in there.
So you can watch that on your Facebook page. That's Historic Scott County Jail. And then the YouTube channel, is it also Historic Scott County Jail?
Yes. And they can watch all of those past episodes. And then they can also go and watch some of the different findings that people have captured there at the jail. We do have on our website, historicscottcojail.com. We also have those episodes up on there as well.
And also on the website, you can get information about investigations. You can book, I believe, on the website as well.
Yes, we do all of our booking for our flashlight tours, our guided ghost hunts, and then also our private paranormal investigations. All of that booking is done through the website there. And then any special events we host, we love our bikers. And so we do a lot of motorcycle rides out of there, blessing of the bike events. And then we also have an escape room in there. So anything that we're doing there at the jail, you can find all of that information either on our Facebook page or on the website.
And look for a link in the show description here, and I'll put a link up there for that. Miranda, wonderful. It's always so fun to talk to you. I find you just fascinating, and you just, I don't know how you ever get enough sleep. I don't think you do, but I don't know why I'm worried
really
about
don't.
That.
I really don't. It has been an absolute pleasure, and I really appreciate you letting me share what I do with Ghost Biker and then what I do here with the jail. It's been a unique and interesting career change for me.
Well, and here down the road in a few months, let's circle back and we'll talk about some of your places that you've gone to and some things that have happened, because I think Absolutely. Your life changes month to month.
It truly does.
And that wraps up our conversation with Miranda Young about the historic Scott County Jail. For more information on tours and paranormal investigations, visit their website at historicscottcojail.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, where you can try it for 3 days free. You can also sign up on patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.